Agenda, June 20th, 1983, 8 a.m., Hearing Room A, Public Hearing, Impossible Work Session, House Bill 2220, 2651, 2653, 2908, and any bills left over from June 17th.
Good morning. The Senate Labor Committee will come to order. The chairperson is going to be absent today, and I will take over until Senator Brown arrives. We're going to begin this morning. Is there anyone here who would like to be heard on House Bill 2220?
Senator McCoy, this bill has had one public hearing, and we were awaiting information from the Employment Division on the issue of whether this is required with respect to conformity with the federal law, and secondly, a possible amendment concerning clarification of a portion of the bill.
Is there anyone here from the Employment Division who would like to do an explanation?
Mr. Chairman, you get to the roll. What are we on?
It's House Bill 2220.
2220.
Mr. Chairman, Libby Leonard, Deputy Administrator of the Employment Division. As I understand it, the question is whether or not certain parts or all of this bill are required for conformity with federal law. We have checked with the U.S. Department of Labor and had this research thoroughly, and we do know that it is required that changes be made for conformity with federal law. We will be very glad to respond to any particular questions of the committee on any specific part of the bill that is troubling to the committee.
Cheyenne, would you like to state what the question was again?
I believe that the Senator Hendrickson had raised a question concerning the conformity issue, and I would like to confirm what Ms. Leonard's statement that staff and the Employment Division staff did meet extensively to go over that issue, and it is indeed required for conformity with federal law. Senator Hendrickson then raised the question of perhaps amending the bill to put a notice requirement into the bill that this change is required by federal law. And the amendment that has just been distributed was prepared by the Employment Division and is a proposed amendment to the bill.
Sorry, Mike. Mm-hmm.
Sorry. Mr. Brown, we're on House Bill 2220.
Thank you. I realize the chairman is sick, and I apologize for being late, and thank you for taking the helm.
Okay. Do you have any questions on House Bill 2220?
No.
Okay. And you wish to make a further statement? Either of you.
We have no further statement.
Okay.
The measure was submitted to bring Oregon's laws in conformity to the federal government's rules. Is that it on unemployment?
Senator Hawk, the measure that's submitted, yes, it would bring Oregon's laws into conformity with new federal law, which requires that if a state has a denial between terms, between school terms, for those in education who are not teachers and administrators, but the non-professional education workers, that the law include higher education, which it had excluded in the past. That's the major part of the bill, part of this bill.
Does the measure in any way extend further the rights of a person under a 9-month contract to receive benefits? Or is it just...
No, if anything, it tightens up a little bit. It says that if that we cannot pay benefits during a recess period if a person has assurance, had worked for an educational institution in the past and has a reasonable assurance of working in the future. And it eliminates the exclusion that had been in there for non-professional workers in higher education.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Mr. Brown.
On the new draft of Section 9, there's just some very modest problems of form and style. I hope maybe the legislative council would look that over. I don't think they start sentences with such notice. I think they have some other procedure. Oh. And they don't end sentences with an adverb like thereby. So okay. If you just want to check that out.
All right.
I was here for the hearing on this, and it's a very complicated issue, but I think I understand it.
Okay. Could you give us an idea of what you're going to do when someone comes in, and would you go through that little scenario? Who is not too sure whether or not he's going to be rehired and doesn't have a contract in his hand.
Donna Hunter, Employment Division, Senator McCoy. When a person comes in and they're a non-instructional employee of an educational institution, when we deny them benefits, which we would this summer if they have reasonable assurance, which may be express or implied or in a contract or otherwise, then we also, on the decision that denies them benefits, will tell them, if you lose your reasonable assurance and you are claiming benefits during this summer, we will retroactively pay you for those weeks. So we do intend to let everyone know who has been denied benefits that if they wish to continue to claim because they're not sure whether the budget's going to pass or for whatever reason, yeah, if they end up not going back, they'll be paid their benefits.
Retroactively?
Yes, they must meet the requirements, all of the other eligibility requirements of our law, which means they have to be looking for work and available for work during the summer.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
Would you also be notifying the schools so that they can notify these people as to how this rather convoluted procedure will work? Section 9, which our committee administrator has prepared, says that the Employment Division will give notice to potentially affected applicants, but will the schools be apprised of this so they can also advise the applicants?
We are not intending to notify each of the school districts in the state of Oregon. Most of them are represented by employer representatives who I'm sure will explain to them the new requirements. We also are going to notify individuals who are non-instructionals at higher education, mm-hmm, that although they're going to be paid during the summertime, there is a provision in the fall then to deny them benefits retroactively, and that would set up an overpayment. So this Section 9 accomplishes it both for non-instructionals in lower education and in higher education.
Well, I think a single sheet of explanation on your letterhead that can be sent to anyone concerned. So I would like each school district of the state. We don't have that many.
We do, Senator Brown, send out after the session a summary of all legislation, and that would go to covered employers, including the school districts.
I think that's going to be too buried for this issue. I think what you need to do is prepare a single 8.5 by 11 explanation of this process, not addressed to anyone in particular, but something that the school can reproduce and give it to affected employers, something that the the unions or the spokesman for the employees can hand out, something that's that everyone feels is authoritative and explains it in very succinct and simple language, because it is a complex concept. I think it's a false economy not to do that one-page explanation so everyone can have something that tells them how it works and on which they can rely as an authoritative discussion of that particular provision of the law. The rest of the laws we do, you know, are not of such special concern. That's my suggestion. I wouldn't let the opportunity pass. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you. I think they will get the word out to the proper persons, I think.
But having it buried, you know, in a 58-page discussion of school law changes or employment law changes, and it doesn't quite do the deed.
Any further comments? Not? Well, thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to be heard on House Bill 2220? If not,
I would move the amendments, Section 9, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Brown moves the amendment to Section 9, stated Section 9 here, as of June 1383. Is there any discussion? Any objections? If not, so ordered.
Mr. Chairman, I move the bill out. Do pass. Recommendation.
Okay. Senator Brown moves House Bill 2220 as amended to the floor of the Senate with the do pass recommendation. All in favor will answer aye. Your name's a call. Opposed, no. Clerk will call the roll.
Senator Hannon. Senator Houck.
Aye.
Senator Kitzhaber.
Aye.
Senator McCoy.
Aye.
Senator Weyers. Senator Brown.
Aye.
Senator Hendrickson.
Mr. Chairman, I would volunteer to carry the bill, and if the Employment Division will prepare me a one-page, 8.5 by 11 explanation, aye, I'll be glad to use that as a starter.
Senator Brown will carry the bill. Okay, we will move now to House Bill 2651. Perhaps before 2651, we will take 2908. I think they're here. Yeah. Diane, would you like to give an explanation of 2908?
On this particular bill, we had heard testimony from several parties, including Mr. O'Connell, the Employment Division. We also have Terry Ann Rogers here, who wishes to present an amendment. I'm not sure who all signed up on this one.
John, do you mean you guys?
Yeah. Okay. Seems that they're all for it. Tom O'Connell is here, Terry Rogers, and Ross Morgan.
Bill 2908. Chairman Ross Morgan, Chairman of the Employment Appeals Board. The committee would like us to do, would you like us to just review for a moment what the bill is? Or?
Yes, we would like that.
Well, this bill, Mr. Chairman, does about four different things. First of all, as far as our board is concerned, it allows for the appointment of pro tem members in the event someone is sick or needs to get some time off. This part-time job has suddenly become a full-time job, and there's no provision for anybody to get away because we have no fringe benefits. We have no sick leave or vacation time or anything like that. This allows for a 90-day appointment of a pro tem member. Number two, it clarifies the law so that the board has the authority to write its own procedural rules, which it was in some doubt in the past, and wanted to make sure that what we're trying to do is declare the independence of this board from the agency, as there seemed to be some doubt about that, even though we have been operating independently. Thirdly, there was a 30-day limitation of the length of time that we could get out a decision, and that has been in the law for many, many years, and it's never, ever been met, and we thought it was time to get that provision out of the law because we were continually breaking the law and had every other board always had been. And so while we're very proud of our timeliness and lead the nation in that field, we felt that that 30-day limitation should be taken out.
Okay.
In addition to that, there are two amendments in the law that have to do with the employment division, Mr. Chairman, and I would ask that Libby Leonard explain briefly what those changes were.
All right.
Mr. Chairman, Libby Leonard, Deputy Administrator of the Employment Division. Section 1 of the bill has some language which would allow the division to take care of a situation which has arisen just in the past year or so under current language, and that is that referees and the board have found that the payment of a check, the clerical function of paying a check, is now considered to be a formal decision which cannot be changed by an authorized representative of the assistant director when we, for instance, discover that in the case of fraud, a person has been drawing benefits and working at the same time. And we have, for years, gone back. The fraud investigator makes a thorough investigation, talks to the claimant, talks to the employer, makes a decision that, yes, in fact, this person has committed fraud. Many times a person even admits it. And then that fraud investigator writes a decision going back and denying those weeks of benefits and setting them up as an overpayment. Well, we have been told by the referees and the board that fraud investigator does not have the authority to do that. And therefore, there are some words in this bill that would change it to give the fraud investigator the authority that he or she has always had. In that regard, Mr. Chairman, we had a discussion at the request of Chairperson Hendrickson. We had a discussion with your committee administrator, Ms. Chapman, and we did have an amendment. Ms. Chapman, whether that has been distributed,
yes,
or where we are. You have that in front of me.
This
amendment, as I understand it,
also have the statement that you prepared.
Thank you. Friday afternoon late, we met with the committee administrator, and we had proposed language for an amendment which we believed would satisfy your chairperson's concerns on that section. And I guess Ms. Chapman would have to say whether or not that, in fact, is now satisfactory language.
I have not had a chance to discuss this with Senator Hendrickson, but it's my understanding that it does meet the concerns that she had. The language in Section 1, which state any decision made pursuant to the subsection which does not require notice may be amended at any time by an authorized rep, was the focus point of the committee's concern. I believe that the amendment as proposed here does require written notice to the claimant, a right of appeal, and puts in a year time limit, which I understand was the intent of Section 1 of the bill. It's my belief that the amendment does address the areas of concern that Senator Hendrickson had.
With that amendment, that would be very satisfactory to the division in regard to Section 1. The other section of the bill that pertains more to the division than to the board is Section 5, which refers to or makes some changes in ORS 657290. What this section does is actually add to two parts or two ways in which the assistant director may take continuous jurisdiction over decisions which have become final. The assistant director has always kept this within a very tight rein. There are only four people in the division who are authorized to take such jurisdiction and reverse decisions. They had been limited to new facts not previously known to the assistant director, errors of computation, and clerical errors. This section would add two other reasons where it would be possible for the assistant director to do this. One would be misinformation provided to a party by an employee of the division. That is, if our own staff somewhere, I'll just say out in the local office, told an applicant, a claimant, something that was wrong, and the applicant acted upon that information and thereby lost benefits or did not file timely or something along that line, and we had to deny their claim based on misinformation we had given them, we would like to have the opportunity to go back and reverse that and say, hey, we're the ones that goofed, and you really are entitled to benefits, and it was our fault. We don't have that opportunity now. The other is errors caused by misapplication of law by a representative of the assistant director. There are times when we've got some 200, 300 adjudicators writing decisions, and they make mistakes. Much as we hate to admit that, we're all human, and they'll take a set of facts and apply the wrong section of law or apply the law incorrectly. When that comes to our attention, rather than go through an entire hearing process, we would like to step in and fix it. So that section does give the assistant director the ability to take continuous jurisdiction and change a decision that has become final if we gave out misinformation or if we misapplied the law.
And those are the sections that you're
those are the two that, yes, those are the okay. two that apply strictly to the division. The rest applies to the appeals board that Mr. Morgan referred to.
Okay.
And those are all contained on the document dated June 17th?
The amendments. Dated June 17th refers to Section 1. The rest of what we've been talking about is in the bill as it stands. Engrossed.
But these are the only extraneous amendments that had not been adopted
yes.
yet that were generated last Friday.
We might yes. have some more coming up as well.
Those are the only ones I'm aware of.
Okay. Go right ahead.
Yes, Senator. Tom O'Connell, Executive Secretary, Employment Appeals Board. On Wednesday, Chairperson Hendrickson posed a question relating to Section 9 of the bill, subsection 7, which appears at the towards the bottom of page 5. I have submitted what my testimony would be in writing. I don't know if you would require anything
is
further.
This the one why the Employment Division seeks the changes?
No.
That's not it.
It's titled Additional Testimony.
Okay. We have it.
It was concerning language regarding the rules of evidence controlling the board need not conform to common law or statutory rules of evidence, mm-hmm. which measure has been in the law since 1937 and allows the division to the Employment Appeals Board to review decisions of the Employment Division's referees subject to the same evidentiary laws as applies to them.
And this is all right with the feds?
Yes.
Explain it. Old type is in error.
Okay, any questions for Mr. O'Connell?
Mr. Chairman, is there a comparable language in our administrative rules dealing with questions of evidence and rules of procedure?
On the third sheet of the handout.
Of your handout?
Yes, is a copy of the Employment Division referee's rules of evidence and other things pertaining to their hearing, starting with subsection 5 of OAR 471-40025. Sub 5 is the evidentiary matter.
That's it.
And this same language is also contained in the law governing other similar agencies, such as workers' compensation. They have a statute with the same language in it.
Or administrative rules with the same language. Thank you.
Are there further questions, comments? Not, we want to thank you. You're going to stick around for a second. Terry Rogers.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, I'm Terry Rogers from Legal Aid in Portland. I think the committee has received amendments proposed by me dated June 6, 1983. They are really very simple amendments. The amendments actually are on page 3 and on page 4. On line 27 of page 3, we are bringing back the language that has been deleted on line 21 to indicate that the assistant director, either upon his own motion or upon application of any party to a claim for benefits, may basically petition for reconsideration. We feel that this language is important for clarity, basically, so that we can retain petitioning for reconsideration, which, of course, is done quite commonly. The changes on lines 31, 32, and 33 change assistant director to division. And in fact, the definition of assistant director in the statute states assistant director means assistant director for employment. And we feel that language is too narrow. As Ms. Leonard actually stated when she was discussing this section about being able to reconsider for misinformation, she stated, quote, misinformation provided by an employee of the division. When she was discussing the misapplication of law, she said, quote, misapplication of law by a representative of the assistant director. And the bill before you says neither. It says simply assistant director. We would submit that it needs to say division to cover both the employees of the division and the representatives of the assistant director. Then finally, on page 4, line 6, we add the language when the employment division is considering correcting previous errors, we add the language errors of fact or law. That language, the language errors of fact or law, is contained in the administrative rules, and there are decisions which state that where the administrative rules are broader than the statute, that of course it's the statute that binds the hearings officer, and of course I think that's a correct interpretation, but it's important that the administrative rules and the statute conform to each other. I think what is intended here is errors of fact and law, but it's very important, particularly in an area where the division itself and an employee may have made an error, rather than an error of fact, that it may be argued on appeal. So we would suggest these amendments. I have submitted these amendments to the Employment Appeals Board and to the division. I think they have no opposition, but of course I will let them speak to to this themselves.
Okay. Questions? Thank you. Yes, would you like to speak to those?
Mr. Chairman, Libby Leonard, Deputy Administrator, Employment Division. We have been aware that these amendments were to be submitted, and we have researched them and, in fact, welcomed them. They do clarify our suggested wording.
Okay. Okay.
Do you have those?
Yes, those were distributed previously, and they have a...
Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to be heard on House Bill 2908? If not, we will close the hearing on House Bill 2908. Return to House Bill 2651.